So we've been, the last few months, we've been going through the eight worldly winds. And just a reminder, because I always have to remind myself, again, the winds are fame and infamy, praise and blame, gain and loss, and pleasure and pain. And we've been, Vijayashri has been guiding, well, she started off with the mandala of the five Buddhas. And so I think that will come into the ending ritual of Vijayashri next week. And we thought it would be really lovely to have some of our wonderful mitras talking about their take on the worldly things. And we hope to hear it from Jane.
Thank you. Well, how lovely to see everybody. Hi. I'm really glad you went through all the four pairs, because I don't know if this is true for anybody else, but usually I can remember three of the pairs. And the final one somehow escapes me, and it's not always the same one that escapes me. So, yes, pleasure and pain, gain and loss, praise and blame, and fame and infamy. I was asked to talk about worldly winds and their effect on my life. And I thought, great, I could talk about that. And when I started sort of preparing for the talk, I realised that this is a very big topic. I couldn't actually think of any point in my life, except possibly meditation, where the worldly winds aren't having some effect. And I thought, well, I can't just talk about that because it's too big and too vague, and I don't do vague. So what I'm going to do, I'm going to take you, hopefully, on a journey with me for one really strong experience in my life. And I'm going to talk about how it was being with that experience before I met Buddhism, and then after I met Buddhism, and then after I found this teaching on the worldly winds. So it's an exploration. Certainly haven't come to the end of it, but I'd like to share it with you. So, this large event in my life happened very suddenly. At the time, this is about, oh, I don't know, 20 years ago probably, I was teaching full time. I had a young daughter. Very busy life. And I remember, as if it was yesterday, I was at an event at the school, and I got up and realised that I was having real difficulty walking, because suddenly there was immense pain in my left foot. I thought I'd strained something. I certainly hadn't been there earlier, and I just got up and there it was. And I was, a little bit surprised, but I thought, well, it will go off. But it didn't. And over the next couple of weeks, it got worse. So that walking was a real difficulty for me. I was sitting there in pain when I wasn't walking, and when I was standing up, I was finding that, for example, I was having to lean on the walls to get round a room because I couldn't walk across the centre of the room. And so, within 6 weeks of that first, my foot hurts, I had a diagnosis from a doctor, which was that I had something called ankylosing spondylitis, that it was never going to go away, and that I was almost certainly going to need crutches to walk, and there was a real and general possibility that I was going to be in a wheelchair in about 6 months' time for the rest of my life. And that, as I say, came absolutely out of the blue within 6 weeks. I'd gone from thinking normally to thinking, oh my goodness me, I could be in a wheelchair. And in a sense, it felt it changed everything. Absolutely everything. And what I found was that I was reacting to this in the way that I always have done. worldly wins, oh yes, so much pain, so much loss, real forays into, oh, I want to blame someone for this, yeah, all of them just there, and all of them feeling almost emotionally overwhelming. I really, really found it difficult to do anything with this. It was just utterly overwhelming, and at the same time very physically painful. So I was sitting there with this, and I don't know about how other people react like this, but when something really bad happens, something that you perceive as really bad, it's very easy to focus on the negatives. I was there with pain, with loss, with blame, with a lot of fear, and actually just sitting there thinking, I don't like this. I don't want this to be happening. And I reacted in the way that I have done for my entire life, which was that I put barriers up. I protected myself by actually pushing this all away, by saying, okay, I can manage this, but I'm not going to think about it too much, because actually I can't, I don't have the resources. I'm going to put the barriers up, I'm going to put walls around myself, I'm going to block it off so that I can manage it. And that's what I've always done in my life. So that was very well thought out, instinctive almost, routine. Put your barriers up and then get on with it. And that will work. And it does work, actually. It works quite well. But it's very hard to hold those walls. It does sort of impinge. I was very lucky, actually, in that it turned out that I wasn't going to end up in a wheelchair. But I still had the pain. I still had to be walking with crutches. I still had all this woof in my mind about how difficult this was to hold. And after a couple of years with this, I got to the point where I knew I needed help. But I didn't actually know how to help, because I was starting to get to the point where I wasn't holding the walls very well, whether it was beginning to press in on me. And at that point, quite out of the blue, I saw a new scientist that actually meditation could help with pain control. And that's why I came here. And from that point on, everything has been different, actually. So I came from that almost overwhelm into somewhere where I met the teachings of the Buddha. And the Buddha talking about metta and compassion. And for me, it was revolutionary. I was sitting there thinking, oh, there's a different way of holding this. I can bring metta in, I can bring compassion in. And I found that I could actually start to look at things a little bit differently because of the influence of the Buddha and the Buddha's teachings. And it was hugely helpful for me. I really felt liberated in some ways, that actually there was another way, that this was great. And I could find more positives rather than just focusing on the negative. So that, for example, the loss of my ability to walk fast actually was a gain in time. I could actually slow down. I could actually really see the beauty of something like that rose, because I wasn't just whizzing past it anymore. I could really appreciate things that I'd never had time to appreciate before. And that was what came to me through this basic Buddhist teaching of metta and compassion. And it was really helpful. It was really good. I found wow. And I sat there thinking, you know, yeah, this is great. I'm doing well here. This is really helpful. I'm getting it. So it was a bit of a shock to find, a few years ago, and I don't know exactly when, this teaching on the worldly winds. Because the Buddha sees things very differently. And it was a bit of an eye-opener for me. And to put that, I've got a quote here from Is it the Lokavipati Sutta is what it's called, the Worldly Wind Sutta. I'm going to read it to you. I'm using Thanissaro's translation, and I have changed it a little bit because this sutta is one of those ones which repeats and repeats and repeats. And I've taken out one thread, the thread of pain, and I've talking about what the Buddha says happens to someone who doesn't see reality as it actually is when you're in these circumstances. So this is the quote. Pain arises for an uninstructed run-of-the-mill person. He does not reflect, pain has arisen for me. It is inconstant, stressful, and subject to change. He does not discern it as it actually is. His mind remains consumed with pain. He welcomes arisen pleasure and rebels against arisen pain. As he is engaged in welcoming and rebelling, he is not released from birth, aging, or death. From sorrows, lamentations, pains, distress, or despairs. He is not released, I tell you, from suffering and stress. And that hit me like a sledgehammer, really. Particularly that last line where I really heard the Buddha's voice. He is not released, I tell you, from suffering and stress. This is not just a little bit something on a piece of paper. This is someone talking to me. Someone saying, what you think is going on isn't actually what's happening, and it's not good for you. It's not helping you. And I got this really strong and slightly weird image of myself as a wind turbine. Yes. Here I am, the wind turbine, and I'm being really buffeted by pain and loss. And I'm spinning like this wind turbine and generating a great deal of heat. Yes? And isn't that what happens? You get into anger, you get into fear, and it's all a hot sort of thing. And I thought, okay, myself as wind turbine, here we go then. But I also saw that what I'd been feeling was helping wasn't actually helping, because the Buddha sees pleasure and gain as more worldly winds. So what I was doing, and where I thought I was getting more balanced and it was working better, was actually increasing the wind strength. Yes. So I suddenly added in, whoo, gain. Yeah? Whoo, pleasure. And I was spinning even faster. Because that's how it is, actually. That's how it is. And I just sat there and thought, okay then. Well, that's okay. But I need to be doing something about this. I need a bit of a rethink here. And I'd been here long enough to know that it was quite likely that the Buddha's view of things was better than mine. Yes. Yes. So rather than going, oh, well, I'm not going to even think about that, I sat there and thought, okay, I need a rethink. And oddly, Vijayashri, what I went to was the Five Buddhas. Mm. Yes. Mm. I went towards the Five Buddhas because I was really drawn by the wisdom aspect. Mm. Yeah? The wisdom aspect of this. And I am so grateful to you for producing this, because I'd seen that a bit vaguely. But when you produce this, suddenly it all became so much clearer to me. And I found it really spooky, because the two Buddhas that I am most drawn to are Ratnasambhava and Amitabha, and they are associated with pleasure and pain and gain and loss. And if that's not spooky, I don't know what is. Yes? And it's just that it was sort of okay. Yes? So I thought, okay, maybe I can work with that. But how do I work with that? It's all very well saying I need a rethink, but But this is a complete reset, really. And so how do I go about doing that? The Buddha says you focus on the inconstant, stressful and subject to change nature of this. But I'll be honest that I've never found that practically helpful. Because what I found was that when I looked at, say, the physical pain, yes, I did see that it changed. And yes, I did see that it fluctuated. But there was never a point where there was no pain. And so it wasn't something that actually helped me work with it. What did help me work with it was looking in a sense at the wisdoms. And I really, really found this very helpful. There's a quote from, I think it's Vaishrapani, saying that wisdom is engaging differently with the worldly winds. And to engage differently, I had to look at them differently. That's how my mind works. And what I found was that I rather like Vaisantra's way of putting this, where the Buddhas and their consorts are not separated. So it's the consorts, the female consorts, that hold the wisdoms, and it's the Buddhas that do. So Vaisantra talks about holding the wisdom and the method. So, for example, I found that Marmaki, who is Ratnasambhava's consort, holds the wisdom of equality. That is, bringing everything in. And from that place of abundance, Ratnasambhava can radiate generosity. So I thought, well, maybe rather than pushing things away, I could start trying to bring things in. And that has been quite a path for me. It's big and it's difficult. I've had a lot of help. But I have begun to be able to bring some of the stuff in. And as I do it, I find that making it part of me so that I am more abundant and not pushing it away does mean that rather than being attached to something, I can be generous with it. So rather than being attached to pain, I can see that pain sometimes that pain isn't just me. I'm not stuck to it. It can move a little bit. And so what I find is that this really helps me. Amitabha and Pandaravarshini. Vasini, yes. She holds discriminating wisdom. And she also holds Dhyana meditation, from which Amitabha can radiate metta and generosity. And I found that really helpful too. Meditation has always helped me. And from that place, I can radiate more compassion towards myself, more metta. And it really, really, really helps. It's not always easy. I can't always do it. But I know from my own experience now that sometimes I can actually address this. There's just little bits of it that I can work with, and each bit that I work with doesn't come back in quite the same way. So change is happening. I really aspire to Virochana. So Virochana is at the middle here. The illuminator. The light, in the sense of the Dharma teaching, shining through. He also has a consort whose name I can never pronounce. Is it Akashadatteshwari? Yes. Okay, thank you. I'm never quite sure about how to get that on my tongue. She holds the emptiness through which the light shines. And so I find that absolutely, I think, yes. That's what I find when I'm meditating, that emptiness through which the light can shine. And it's wonderful. I aspire to Virochana. Most of the time, I can't really quite get there, but every now and then you get a glimpse. Yes. He holds awareness. He holds clarity. And as I said at the beginning, I don't really do vague. Clarity is good. for me anyway, clarity is good. And with awareness of what's going on, I can try and move from, I am in pain, I don't like it and I want to push it away, to, there is pain. And that loosens my ego identification with it. It stops it being who I am, and it finds a better place. And that loosening, well, slows the wind turbine down, actually, because I'm no longer quite seeing the pain in the same way. I'm no longer quite seeing the gain in the same way. The wind turbine slows down and there's less heat. And it really, really seems to work that way for me. And I am just so inspired by the Dharma and by what the Buddha taught, that he could see reality like this, and that it's possible for me to approach it. Yeah. You know, it's obviously still a very long way to go, because this is a lifetime's work. I don't see how you could ever stop working with these things. They're going to hit you all the time. But there is hope that I can actually really work with this and work with it more. And so I'm going to end up with another quote, actually, from the sutta, and again it's Thanissaro's translation. I'm not going to quote the whole thing, it's a little bit at the end. When he describes worldly winds, he doesn't use quite the same terms, but it is the same thing. So he says, gain and loss, status and disgrace, censure and praise, pleasure and pain. These conditions among human beings are inconstant, impermanent, and subject to change. Knowing this, the wise person, mindful, ponders these changing conditions and says, desirable things don't charm the mind. Undesirable ones bring no resistance. His welcoming and rebelling are scattered. And that just gets to me. It really gets to me. It's such a message of hope. And I think, yeah, this is more who I want to be. This is what I want to be doing. And I find it guides me throughout what I'm doing on my day to day. When I wake up and it's difficult, I try and come back to here, and sometimes I can. And it's just, well, yeah, everything has changed for me. Everything changed when I met Buddhism, but it changed even more when I met this teaching. It just seemed written for me, actually. Yes. So that's my journey. I'm still with it. I'm still doing it. I still have to work at it all the time. But there is real hope there, and I feel inspired by it. So, yeah, that's what I wanted to say. That's what I wanted to be with. Thank you for listening.
Thank you. Thank you.